So we're on letter number 14, the last one of the six categories of Rav Shmuel Shimon Paul Hirsch's breakup of the mitzvot. This is the category of avoda. To open up, the Rav Hirsch has an incredibly powerful line we're going to come back to at the end of this letter. He doesn't quote it here in the letter, but in some of his other writings it shows up. He said, "I suggest we close the shoals for 100 years. A famous line, we learned this over Pesach, I think maybe both of us learned this over Pesach. It's one of my favorite lines from Hirsch's writing. What was he saying? How could he suggest, how could an Orthodox rabbi suggest that we should close down the shoals for 100 years? Shockingly enough, we've experienced what that might even feel like over the past 6 months. But what was behind that suggestion? What problem was he trying to suggest? Or what was the goal of saying we should shut down the shoals for 100 years? Sounds radical, and he admitted that it definitely was radical. What was he trying to accomplish? So we're going to talk about tefillah. We're going to talk about the role that a shoal is meant to play. We'll come back to that quote at the end of the letter, and we'll try to understand, or we'll see how Rav Hirsch fleshed out what suggestion he was really making. So this last category of avoda, is mitzvos, which have to do with avoda, service. Now, not sound service, the way Rav Hirsch talks about everything is really avoda, but it's a specific aspect, a specific type of service. Whereas most of life, most of what we do, all the other five categories of mitzvos we've been discussing, are avoda, you could say, shebegos. The avoda, the service of Hashem that we provide, that we act out in life using our bodies, the avoda of the sixth category is avoda shebelev. Now, if you had to translate avoda shebelev, the contemporary translation, what do those two words mean? Avoda shebelev. Okay, work of the heart. How would you translate? Same. Work of the heart, service of the heart, avoda shebelev. So, Rav Hirsch doesn't say it exactly this way, but I think for Rav Hirsch, a better translation might be, instead of avoda shebelev being service or work of the heart, service on the heart. Avodah Shebelev is not using the heart to serve, which is how we usually think about or speak about tefillah. Davening, prayer, is using our heart to inspire ourselves to pray to God. He says, really what tefillah is almost the opposite. It's working on our lave, working on our insides, working on our perspectives, to tweak them, to set them up so that we will then be able to go out in life with a proper perspective, And live life properly. Live life the way Hashem wants us to be, or act in life the way Hashem wants us to act. And his problem with the standard understanding of what avodah shebelev means, what tefillah is really supposed to be, is if you really think tefillah is meant to be this almost spontaneous eruption of feeling, reaching out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and then asking for certain things, or getting up the enthusiasm, getting up the emotion to say like, Hashem, you're incredible, shevach, bakasha, toda. We know the different parts that do make up tefillah. How can we be commanded to reach those levels of emotional depth? Not only commanded to reach those levels of depth, how can we be commanded to reach those levels 3 times a day, saying the exact same thing over and over again? It doesn't make sense that on cue, I can snap my fingers and say, all right, now's the time for emotional outpourings of love and feeling. It's not the way emotions work. We can be told over time to work towards a specific feeling. That's true. There are mitzvahs which involve working on your emotional relationship to something. But on the spur of the moment to say like, okay, it's time for shacharis now. You need to be incredibly excited. You need to be filled with love towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's not how people work. So to say that's what tefillah is mandating us to do is almost setting us up for failure. It's guaranteeing that we are not going to be able to do that. Rav Hirsch says, in fact, we're not supposed to be trying to do that. That's not the goal. We're not trying to conjure up false emotion, clapping our hands and swaying and jumping. That's not what tefillah is meant to be. Tefillah is meant to be a calm, reflective, inside look, taking a look at how you're processing, how you're approaching life, and saying, is my life matching up with the way Hashem wants it to be in the most direct way possible? And then you can take that inspiration, you can take that almost time out from regular life to then go back to whatever it is that you're going to do to enter the workday, to take a break from the workday for Mincha, to close the day off with Mariv and say, how did I do? What am I looking to do here? How am I doing so far? Each tefillah as necessary. the idea of Avodah Shebelev is this concept of self-assessment, is going through the different parts of davening. We'll spend a second to do that, but to go through the different parts of davening, asking yourself that question, does my perspective match up with the way Hashem wants me to see what's going on? So let's take, for example, Shacharis. The way Rehersh doesn't discuss that in this letter, but he does in Chorev. Chorev, the section on Avodah is not huge, but it's incredibly, you can understand why it's so important to go through. Three times a day, we're meant to be understanding these concepts, seeing these ideas, and he tries, he goes through in a, let's say, a Kitzer version, what the different parts of Tefillah are. So he says there are six different categories of Tefillah, six different ways to break up the different Tefillahs that we say. So the first one is Tehillah and Tefillah. Tehillah and Tefillah correspond mainly to Pesukei Dezimra. Pesukei Dezimra can be broken down into two different, let's say, categories or types of praise. Right? Pesukei Dezimra, we are praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we're saying two different things about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's the focus almost in the first half, the first two-thirds of Pesukei Dezimra? There's one almost overarching theme. There's a specific type of praise that we're giving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the first half, the first two-thirds of Pesukei Dezimra. Nature? Beautiful, Ezra, exactly, nature. The first chunk of Pesukei Dezimra is dedicated to seeing Hashem in nature, the incredible system that he built. We've spoken before about the interconnectedness and the interrelationship of all the different creatures within nature. That's the first half. You see that in Ashrei, the Halukas, that's very, very clear. You transition from Ashrei, from the Halukas, into Vayomer David, the Charos, especially Az Yashir. What is highlighted, what aspect of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is highlighted in those three tefillos, the end of Pesukei Dezimra? Well, strength, but in a specific direction, not just miracles. Related, Hashem is performing miracles for a purpose. Hashem's involvement in human history. Hashem is choosing to get involved in the course of the world, in the course of the Jewish people, and he's willing even to change the course of history if he feels that's what's necessary. So we're seeing Hashem interacting with us, we're seeing Hashem in the clearest way, in, on the one hand through nature, on the other hand through human history, in so many different ways. There's almost this multifacetedness of how Hashem, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu interacts with the world. Pesukei Dezimra. We then go from there into Birchas Kriyat Shema and Kriyat Shema. What is the essential point of Kriyat Shema? What are we trying to accomplish? Kriyat Shema is Kabbalah Samach Hashemayim. It's Yichud Hashem. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Coming off of Shevach, of the Tehillah and the Tefillah, of recognizing the multiplicity of how Hashem is able to be involved in the world through this aspect of nature, that aspect of nature, this part of history, this element of history, seeing Hashem almost as a broad being, as almost you can see different parts of who he is. Kriyat Shema takes those parts, takes that multiplicity, and says every single one of those aspects is part of Hashem Echad. It's part of this one God who controls, who runs, who's in charge of this entire world. How is he in charge of it? Because he brought it into existence. We recognize that. Malachim recognize that. That's what we're saying through Birchos Kriyat Shema. When we dedicate ourselves to that Hashem Echad, to that one God that everybody else, that everything else in the world is dedicated to, Hashem created and therefore we all work for, that's Kabbalah Samach Hashemayim. That progression of seeing Hashem in the details of seeing Hashem in nature and history, and then being miyachid Hashem through Kriyat Shema, leads us into Shemoneh Esrei. That experience prepares us to be able to say, Hashem, I now recognize you as the one who sets the tone, who sets our direction for everything in life, for all the different things I'm now going to talk about. Every single one of them is guided by you, is set up and maintained by you. So now I'm going to turn to you and ask you for help in every single one and check myself in terms of every single one. How am I doing? How's my progress? How's my perspective? And we go through our personal avodah, things which are relevant to us as individuals. We transition almost into the more important part, our status as a community, as a nation. How are we doing as Am Yisrael, physically, spiritually, working towards the ultimate goal of spreading HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the rest of the world? These are all statements that we're making, that we're committing ourselves to, the concept of a bracha. let's say right now, each one of these, every aspect of Shemoneh Esrei is set up as a bracha. What exactly is a bracha? So it is a different opinions, it's a relatively big discussion. The Hirsch's approach to brachos in general is that a bracha is to bless somebody. What does it mean to bless somebody? So let's say you were helping an old lady cross the street. You're a nice guy, you're helping her get on the bus, get off the bus, hey, you're doing an old lady a favor. And she says, as old ladies tend to do, oh, young Sonny, bless you. Thank you so much, bless you. What did she mean when she said that? What was she saying to you, bless you? What statement was she making? The things that you want to see happen in the world should come true for you. The things that you want to see happen in the world should come true for you. You helped me. I appreciate that. The things that you want to see happen in the world should come true for you. Now, let's say you turned to her and said, you know what? There is something I've been working on for a long time. I've always wanted the autograph of a lady over the age of 70. And that happens to be you. Is there any way you could help me out? What do you think her obvious response is going to be? Of course, I'd love to. I have the opportunity to further your desire in the world. You help me out, I want to repay you if I can. I bless you. I want to repay that. I want to help you fulfill your rut zone in the world. Let me help you out. There's a shocking Gemara in Brachos. Surprising. Surprising Gemara in Brachos. Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Yishmael, Rav Elisha. That's a song by Avram Fried. Beautiful song. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yishmael, B'Rebbe Elisha, Tamachas Nichnasti. That's from Dovi. Tamachas Nichnasti. Last year, Kitori Asleith Naiv Lifnim. Rabbi Yishmael, coming Gadol, walked into the Kodesh HaKadosh one time, presumably it was on Yom Kippur, to offer up Kitori. V'ra'isi Akasrikel, Sar Hashem Tzavakos. And I saw Akasrikel, the Malach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a representative of God, sitting in the Kodesh HaKadosh. The Amar Li, that Malach said to me, Rabbi Yishmael says in the Gemara, Barcheini. You give me a bracha. He asked for a bracha from Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol. The representative of God requested a bracha from a Basar Vadam. What is that? Well, how could that be? We know, Baruch Ad Hashem, we bless God relatively often, but for Hashem to request a bracha from Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol is very surprising. And the Gemara tells us what bracha he gave. It's like awkward. You know, like the shtick at weddings, the chassan has like super bracha powers, so everybody lines up. What? Birthdays? Now it's extended to me. It's a Sephardi thing by birthdays, no? I think the Rosh Hashiva. No, the Rosh Hashiva will go to guys and ask for a bracha. Yeah, that. So any of those situations, somebody shows up and says like, "Hey, give me a bracha." So like, it is incredibly awkward. There's a lot of pressure to say like, "You have bracha powers now. Like, give me the right bracha." So like, everyone's like, do-reish in the words that the guy uses. The chassan's like, "Oh, he said this. Maybe he thinks I'm going to get married by next year." Like, there's a lot of pressure. Like, what bracha are you going to give? You're if you're doing it right. If you have that koach, then you're trying to tap into something which is unique to the person, what they need to hear, they want to hear, something which is going to get them thinking about something specific. Brachos are not pashut. Brachos are not simple. So what is this concept of a bracha? If we're committing ourselves, when we give a bracha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're committing ourselves to furthering His will in the world. So Amar Li Barcheini said, give me this message that you're committed, that you're furthering my will, my rutzon in the world. And that's true, that's what we do with every part of Shemoneh Esrei. When we commit ourselves verbally through the brachos of Shemoneh Esrei, we commit ourselves to this aspect, furthering Hashem's will through chachma, furthering Hashem's will by asking for tshuva, recognizing we did something wrong, for slicha, parnasa, refua, going through every single bracha from Esrei, we're reinforcing for ourselves, this is what our focus should be on. We should be trying to be memali b'ratzon Hashem. Am I thinking about this aspect? Am I thinking about that aspect? And that's what we go through each time we say Shemoneh Esrei. That's done on a personal level, that's done on a communal level for Chazar Shashat. So that's the example that he goes through for Shachar. And then we have to come down from on high. We finish off with another round of Tefillah. And Tefillah, Ashrei V'Lotzion, Aleinu. Aleinu is really like the highlight. Not the highlight, but it could be almost like the mission statement of what we're trying to accomplish. Aleinu is when we say, on the one hand, we recognize, we appreciate the fact that you've assigned us to such a lofty mission, that we have this unique status in front of you. We are the Amah Nivchar, we are the ones who are meant to bring your teaching to the world. But on the other hand, we also, Al-Kin, the Kavalacha, we recognize the goal of spreading Ratzon Hashem and Yedias Hashem to the entire world, to all of mankind. It's such an incredibly aspirational declaration. We know what our goal is, and even if we see how far away that might be, we see how difficult it is to actually get there, but every single day, twice a day, multiple times a day, we're saying, this is our goal. This is what we're working towards, and we're able to repeat that for ourselves, we're able to remind ourselves that we're aiming for through the process of tefillah. He talks about how the tefillah was meant to be the parallel to, or the foil to avodas hakorbanos. He actually does talk about how different aspects of the korban service were meant to correspond to different parts of Shemoneh Esrei. He has a very, I think, difficult essay where he talks about there were, I think, 18 parts to the korban tamid. Korban tamid for Sachar was cut up into 18 different parts and brought up to the mizbeach in like 18 sections. What does the number 18 remind you of in the context of tefillah? Well, the number of brachos of Shemoneh Esrei, exactly. So he tries to show the one-to-one, the correspondence between, let's say, this section of the Korban Tumid, like the front foreleg plus the chest and something else, trying to show which of the brachos in Shemoneh Esrei that corresponds to. That's a symbolism that I have not fully understood yet. But at least the effort, the assumption that there must be a correlation between Korbanos and Tefillah makes a lot of sense. We know that the Tefillah is based on the Korbanos themselves, so for there to be a correlation is actually very misavo. Okay, so that was Tefillah. He also talked about the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was meant to be this place where we could go to for a similar purpose, for a similar goal, to re-inspire, to reignite ourselves, to say, this is what our goal is, this is what we're aiming for. The Aron being in really the center, the goal was built around the Aron Kodesh, about the Zvar Hashem, Yedias Hashem, the Torah, being in the center of everything we do, then taking one step out of the Kodesh HaKodashim and seeing the menorah and the Shulchan, our mental capacities, our material capacities being dedicated towards that goal, and then moving one step out, dedicating our entire physical lives through the act of korbanos, the symbolic dedication, the symbolic giving up of our lives, to then get those things back and dedicate to real physical life. Those were the statements we should be able to make with the Beis HaMikdash and Har HaBayis. We obviously don't have that anymore. All we have is the verbal reminder, the verbal form that those things would have taken, and we need to take advantage of that as much as we can. So in different places he talks about the different types of korbanos. This is really more in Perash HaTorah because it's not currently relevant. He says that the animals used for a korban ola symbolize one thing. The idea of a keves, the idea of a lamb, symbolizes our recognition of God as the ultimate shepherd. Right? Because sheep, lambs are the ones that need to be shepherded, they need to be taken care of. So when a person brings a lamb as a korban, it's a recognition that Hashem is the one who takes care of all my physical, my material needs. On the other hand, and let's say a goat, an aes, is an animal which has the strength, has the personality where it fights against subservience, that it doesn't follow the crowd the way most other grazing animals do. It does not follow the crowd. So an aes is brought into context where we're trying to say, we need to be able to stand strong, we need to be able to resist foreign influences and stand up for what's right. And another example is a par. There are a couple of korbanos, not so many, where you bring a par, you bring a cow. A cow is a working animal, as opposed to sheep, as opposed to goats, who just graze. They do provide something, but they don't actually work for you. A cow actually puts in work. Whichever mission in the six, you rent a par, lacharosh bahar, lacharosh zika. So a cow actually works for you. That's a statement of dedicating yourself to avodah. Not to say that Hashem, you provide for my needs, but rather, I work on your behalf. So each different type of animal actually says, is a different statement the person could be trying to make. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, an ola would be one, a chatas could be another, the yashim is a third, shlamim and toda would be a fourth, and that actually corresponds very nicely with the different types of korbanos we're asked to bring. Obviously it corresponds to the different yam tovim also. Different yam tovim have their own unique natures, which corresponds to the types of korbanos that we're meant to bring. And that's a big chunk of Rav Hirsch's commentary on the parshas in Vayikra, which talk about korbanos is teasing out those ideas. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. Okay, so then once you get out of tefillah, the Rav Hirsch says that the culmination of and really the ideal form of tefillah is the concept of brachos.
translate the brachos. You know that ma of Yata Yisrael ma shem lokecha shoel me'imaf. The Gemara says that ma should be read as mea. And that pasuk is the source for the dinner of 100 brachos. You're meant to make 100 brachos each day. The Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Klai Yisrael, the goal is Yiras Hashem, Mashal Ki'im Liras Hashem Elokecha. How do you get to Yiras Hashem? The way the Nesiv explains Yiras Hashem, I think Rav Hirsch also explains Yiras Hashem as awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shivisa Hashem HaNeg Mikamed throughout the entire day. What is the number one tool that we have in our toolbox to keep our awareness of God front and center? So he says the concept of brachos. Brachos on food and drink, brachos on mitzvos, brachos during davening, brachos on exciting events, selach v'odah. So many different things that come up over the course of the day. You have the opportunity to make a bracha. It's this 5 second, this 10 second break in the middle of your day to refocus yourself. Hashem, baruch atah Hashem. Hashem, I am rededicating myself to furthering your goals in the world in the context of whatever it is, in the context of the meal that I'm about to have. I'm going to use the strength that I'm getting from this meal in order to go up and have a good afternoon seder. Anything like that is this opportunity to say, and it's peppered, it's spaced throughout the entire day, to get this quick reminder, this quick confusion of, Hashem, this is what I'm trying to do, I'm rededicating myself to your service. So brachos is almost the ideal form of what tefillah should be, could be for us, and that's spaced throughout all of daily life. Okay, some of the other... So let's go back to that quote we said. We first had this line. If it was up to me, I would close all shoals for 100 years. With this perspective, with this understanding on what his vision of shoals and tefillah is meant to be, what was he trying to say? Well, I guess what had happened over time that he was trying to combat? What? Over-reliance on shoals. Yes, this over-reliance on shoals that people mistakenly started thinking that the be-all and end-all of Avodas Hashem, of Judaism, was meant to be located in the Beit Knesset. But as long as you came morning and night, and sacrificed your half hour, your 45 minutes, let's say the hour and a half over the course of the day, as long as you sacrificed that time to God, you were free to do whatever you wanted with the rest of your day. Judaism is in shul, and there's nothing to do with outside. In reverse, said like that. That's the opposite of what's supposed to be happening. What we're supposed to be doing with our time in shul is refocusing on ideals for the sole purpose of going out, of leaving shul, and living those ideals, living those values in practice. You guys know what the word shul actually means? What does the word shul mean? Right? Shul is not a Hebrew word. It's not a Jewish word. What is the word shul? What language is it in? Huh? Yiddish, German. So what does it mean in its original language, in, let's say, Yiddish or German? It's not bad, Father. If you, let's say you spelled it with S-C-H-U-L-E. Probably the way you spelled it in German or Yiddish. It looks close enough to another very similar word. Yes. Shul is school. So what's the connection, school and shul? Exactly. The whole point of shul is just it's an educational institution for the people who have graduated day school. That instead of having to slog through kindergarten through 12th grade and have the day in, day out of the test or whenever it is, you've left that institution, enoch inami, but you do still need guidance in fulfilling these ideals in your life. Shul is the school where adults go to refocus, to reignite, to re-inspire, in certain cases re-educate ourselves towards these ideals. If you think that the be-all and end-all of Judaism was meant to be in the shul, you've totally missed the purpose, you've totally missed the point. That would be like saying, I'm going to school for the sake of school, not to gain skills, not to gain knowledge, which will then be helpful in my occupation. I'm going to college, I'm going to YU. Not so that I can eventually, I can take courses in psychology so that I can eventually get a job in psychology as a psychologist, or I can go to SciSims so that I can eventually go into marketing. No, to see it as I'm only here to gain knowledge, and the skills, the ideas, the knowledge that I gain here is going to have no impact. I'm not going to use in my actual day-to-day life. So then you're wasting your time. What are you doing? The whole point of that school experience, that educational experience, is to be picking up ideas and concepts that you will then use in your actual life. So he says it's the same thing with our shuls, same thing with the Beit Knesset, the place where we're getting together as a community to together focus in on the ideas which are meant to guide us in life. So the other Oh, and once, and if that was, if that misunderstanding has definitely crept into the Jewish world. In order to combat that, Rav Hirsch was saying, I want to close down the shoals for 100 years. I want to forcibly redirect people away from the shoal, and they're going to be forced to recognize that the locus, the focus of Judaism should not be the shoals, but rather should be the home, should be family, should be businesses, but not for the sake of money, business for the sake of yeshiva olam and building up the world, creative development in the world. All those things are meant to be the focus of our activity, but with the inspiration of Dvar Hashem, with the inspiration, with the guidance of focusing on God. So there are a few other mitzvahs that he includes in the section. Number one, he spoke about tefillah, the tefillah in during the week, during the mechol, his tefillah on Shabbos, during special days, during all the Yom Tovim. Each one of the Yom Tovim add a special, unique, almost flavor or a unique focus to tefillah. And the different tefillahs also, let's say the musafim, are fully dedicated to talking about those ideas, whereas Shacharis Mincha Maariv have an infusion of, but they're not fully overtaken by those ideas. They're more general for every yontif. Then Dvarim Shabakdusha, Kaddish Kedusha and Baruch Hu, Kriyas HaTorah. Kriyas HaTorah is the communal opportunity to be re-inspired by the actual Dvar Hashem itself, where we're taking time to read the Dvar Hashem in its original form and share that with the Tzibur. Then we have Birchas Kohanim, Yira for the Beis Hamikdash, Yira for Beis Knesset and Beis Medrash. All those mitzvot, or all those concepts, refocus ourselves or prepare us to be able to get as much as we possibly can from the experience of coming to Shul in order to daven and reconnect with that perspective. One surprising one that he includes is the idea of language, is the idea of speaking, knowing, learning, and speaking Hebrew. There's a Pirkei Rabbi Elazar, I think. The Pirkei Rabbi Elazar, and it's quoted by the Rambam. He says that speaking Hebrew is a mitzvah kalah. Speaking Hebrew actually has the status of a mitzvah. It says that teaching your son Hebrew is a mitzvah kalah, which people often overlook or don't take advantage of. It's understandable why it would have the status of a mitzvah. It's one of the strongest things that you can do to ensure that your kid will be able to actually learn and learn on his own relatively quickly. If he knows the language, then he'll be an insider in learning as opposed to an outsider. But in Rav Hirsch's system, the only real way to understand what a word is trying to say, what a concept, what a sentence is trying to say, is to understand the word in its original. We spoke about it really in the beginning of the letter. The way he ended off letter two, the way he first ended off letter two, is that we are dafka going to be engaging with Torah in its original language. And he spoke about how these concepts, ideas, come from the form that the words take. One example is, say, tefillah. Tefillah, he refers to as, comes from the shorash of lifaleo, pe lamed lamed, is related to the word balal. Anybody recognize the word beis lamed lamed balal? Balila, what? Mivulbal, related. It's the idea of being, of everything being mixed together, of infused into one mixture. So if there's a relationship between the two words, balel and lifalel, balel is for everything to be mixed together and made into one, how would that extend to tefillah? How does that shape or change a little bit our understanding of what tefillah is meant to be? He says tefillah is meant to take ideas from the outside, ideas of Hashem's perspective on the world, and to infuse them and to insert them into ourselves. We're doing an act of belila through tefillah. It's not just cute, oh, they sound the same. Rav Hirsch's understanding is that the language is built with these shared concepts, with words that share similar roots and overlapping foundations are not just, they're related to each other not only in sound but also in concept, in the words that they're trying to say. And throughout Rav Hirsch's Perash Al HaTorah, you'll see him working with this type of idea and using it to explain what exactly does the word mean. We can give you a general sense. I can tell you in general that simcha means happiness or joy, but if I can connect simcha to tzimicha, a tzemach, a plant which has the capacity for growth, I now have a much stronger insight as to what specific type of simcha the word simcha is describing. By connecting simcha to tzmicha, now I have a totally new perspective on what type of joy this is meant to be. Another incredible one, this is, I think, one of my favorite ones, the word nasi. The word nasi means two things.
One means a president or a leader. What's the other one? Much less common. What? Beautiful, a cloud. Yeah, that one's much less common, but it does come up every so often. A nasi is also a cloud. What is the relationship between a nasi as a leader and a nasi as a cloud? So we know, we live in the natural world, we know what a cloud does. How does a cloud, how does a cloud work in the world? What does a cloud do? It gathers rain and then sends it down. So what's the scientific process where the cloud is able, where does the cloud get the water from? Exactly. It gets the water from the ocean, it gets the water from evaporation down below. So if you looked at a cloud, on the one hand, it's like, wait a minute, this cloud is just taking from everything below it. What gives it the right to take? What gives it the right to just suck off all this water from the ground below that needs it? But if you keep watching, if you understand what's really going on, the cloud is taking moisture in the air, which was unusable. It's taking the evaporated water from the oceans where it's not actually helping anybody. It's collecting it inside the cloud and bringing it to a place where it can actually be useful. By sending down rain in a different place, it's then giving the water to the plants which need it to actually facilitate life. So what does a leader do? You look at a leader is just taking. A leader, who appointed this guy leader? Who said this guy should have the kavod of leadership of being the one in charge? Who made him king? But if you understand what a leader is really supposed to do, a leader does not take for the sake of taking. A leader takes only in order to then give back, only in order to then facilitate further growth, further development. Connecting a nasi, a human leader, to the nasi of a cloud gives us beautiful insight into what is a leader supposed to do. A leader is like a cloud. A cloud takes in order to give back. In a chinami, there is an act of taking there, but it's for the purpose of creating, of developing, of giving back. So to a leader, so to the nasi, nasi v'shevet, in a chinami, there's a giving, there's a control which is exerted. There is a certain amount of almost dominance in the by function of being a leader, but at the same time, that's never for my own gain. It's not for me to take and take and take. It's taking solely in order to give back. So the insights gained by language, the insights gained by understanding, by reading Torah, by learning Torah in its original form, gives a whole new level of understanding, a whole new level of depth, which explains why this would be included under the as a mitzvah of avoda. Okay, so that is the category of avoda. He ends off. He had a couple of good lines I wanted to read. Yeah, it's just one sentence which really sums up what we said. This is in the beginning of the 14th letter. Tefillah, prayer, represents the endeavor to arrive at an accurate assessment of ourselves in relation to God, the world, and man. That's the end of that first paragraph. Tefillah represents the endeavor to arrive at an accurate assessment of ourselves in relation to God, the world, and man, clarifying what our role in the world is meant to be, and then going out and doing it. So he ends off, now, my dear Benjamin, ask yourself this question. A body of teaching, he's going to summarize the six categories that we've been discussing over the past few weeks. A body of teaching that calls on us to recognize God's presence in the world and in human existence, to accept his will as our task, that lets us see him as the father of all human beings and every creature and every human being as our brother, that turns our whole life into service of God by having us act justly and lovingly, right? Tzedek and Mishpat, love and justice towards each other and every being, that was Mishpatim and Hukim, and instructs us, moreover, to teach these basic truths of life to ourselves and to others. Can this be a doctrine that cripples the heart as well as the mind, that stifles the joys of life and turns men into brooding monks? Who made those accusations? Whose perspective was that he's responding to? So those were a number of the points that were made in letter number one. In Benjamin's first letter, he had made a bunch of points. We remember we put on the board back when we were allowed to be in classrooms. We had put a number of his complaints on the board. A bunch of them were that Judaism is just like a soul-sucking, deadening religion which is so focused on minutiae, irrelevant details that have no impact on the actual life. Why should I commit to this? Why should I care to engage? Why should I care to commit myself to these things? This is Rehersh's like first, he's starting off. He's already making the point of we've done this retrospective. We've done this broad overview
of what the different mitzvot are, can you really accuse them of being subtle minutiae which have no impact on life? These are huge concepts. These are how we look at our friends, how we look at the rest of the world, what role we are meant to play as part of the Jewish people, as part of humanity. Those cannot be described as sucking the joy out of life and soul-deadening details. It's so much more than that. So we're actually going to go, that's the entire letter 15, is actually a piece-by-piece refutation of letter 1. In letter 1, Benjamin had said, I have all these questions, I have all these issues with Judaism. The verse said in letter 2, in his response, is Naftali, so you know what, I could go piece by piece, I could go point by point, but I'm not going to. I think we have a misunderstanding of what Judaism is meant to be in the first place. You're missing the whole Yesod. We need to first establish the foundation. You first need to explain what everything is supposed to, what is Judaism meant to be in the first place, and then all your questions will fall away by themselves. So we've done that. We've gone through 14 letters. It's been a great journey going through Moriah and then basically Chorev. Reverse says now, all of your questions should have fallen away. None of your questions, if we were to go back to that letter 1, they should all have been responded to. They should be clearly not relevant. But you know what? We're going to do that explicitly, and thank God Reverse did that. We are now going to go. You said this with our new understanding of what Judaism is. This is the response. This is showing you how clearly misunderstood you must have been when you asked that question, when you made that point. And we'll go point by point. It's a great read. And the next few letters, 15, 16, 17, and 18, are really, let's say, talking about more modern issues that are relevant to the Jewish community, more specifically talking about involvement with the wider world, the idea of reform, the idea of certain issues which have crept into the Jewish people, Jewish practice, over time. There are a lot of really fascinating stuff built into the next few letters. And then letter 19, the actual last letter, is almost like a postscript, where it refers to as, I'm not going to spoil it, but letter 19 is almost like a postscript to the entire thing, which then introduces, introduces Horeb, which introduces the last, his subsequent book. Okay, any questions? Of what? Yeah. Nice, cool. Who says that? The tour? That's beautiful. Mivulbal is the idea of mixing everything, getting mixed together. So that's Bezlam Lamed. A slightly different variation of that is Lefal Leo, is to insert things from the outside into myself.
And then the idea is go out and put the body back.
Well, once I have those values, then yeah, my life will be guided by that perspective. But the idea of Tfila is to make that infusion. Okay, sure.